It is I, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, blogger, muckraker, troublemaker, here for one final night on the Mike Malloy program, sitting in for Mike and Kathy, who are enjoying their week-long vacation down in sunny Florida. I hope they've had a good one. I've had a great time this week, but they will be back on Monday. I could hear the collective sigh of relief across the country. I'm sorry, but you'll only have to stick with me for three more hours. I will make it worth your while, even though I gotta say, the helicopters are driving me insane. I feel like Michelle Bachmann, the crazy of the black helicopter crowd. Yeah, I feel like the helicopters are driving me crazy. I'm out here in Los Angeles. We're broadcasting from beautiful downtown Burbank, AM 1150 K Talk Studios. Sitting in Stephanie Miller's chair, and so we're just a few miles from where the Michael Jackson madness, and as where I happen to live, it's very close to the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And now, I don't think Michael Jackson is coming back yet, just in case, apparently, people are gathering around his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame as if he may rise out from it. And not only are they gathering by the hundreds down there on Hollywood Boulevard, just in case he comes back, the news media from every damn local channel, probably every network channel, has a helicopter out hovering above the crowds just in case he does come back. And it has been driving me insane all damn day. It's like, there's also down on Hollywood near the Walk of Fame, that's where the Kodak Theater, what do we call it? Kodak Center? Kodak Theater, where they hold the Academy Awards. And every year when they hold the Academy Awards out there, they shut down Hollywood Boulevard. They actually turn Hollywood Boulevard into the red carpet. They put red carpet all the way down the street. And for the entire weekend of the Academy Awards, helicopters are day and night getting live shots for the news and driving me insane. So we usually try to get the hell out of town, get the hell out of Dodge during the Academy Awards. Who knew that Michael Jackson was going to die? And the result would be, it would drive me insane. The good news is, it's driving me insane while I'm hosting the Mike Malloy Show. So I can think of no better place to be insane than right here. And I'm glad you will be joining me for it tonight. We got a lot of great guests. We're going to take a lot of calls if I can fit them in. We're going to have the great blogger, Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel. She's going to be joining us for an entire hour and taking your questions on accountability, on Bush accountability, on, yes, Obama accountability, on war crimes, on Valerie Plame, on just about any damn thing you want to talk about, on the media, the failings of the media. We're going to take all kinds of calls on that. We're also going to be joined by Ellen Tyson of VotersUnite.org. A lot of folks out there may know me, Brad Friedman, from my various appearances on, a bunch of progressive radio shows talking about election integrity. It's one of the things we're known for at BradBlog, reporting on election fraud, the distinction between election fraud and voter fraud. Election fraud is a concern. Voter fraud, not so much. Unless you're Ann Coulter, against whom there are voter fraud charges now pending in Connecticut after she was let off the hook in Florida. I'll talk a little bit about that in the next segment if I can get to it with some audio from our friends at Crazyland, a.k.a. Fox News. You watch Fox lately? It's really quite fun because they're insane. They're nuts. They so jumped the shark at Fox News so long ago. I mean, it is like an absolute freak show. Sean Hannity is like, who's, you know, coming up next, the bearded lady. Yeah, sword swallowers. And if that's not enough, Glenn Beck. I mean, these guys are nuts. Anyway, so we're going to talk to Ellen Tyson at votersunite.org because, frankly, I haven't gotten to talk about election issues all week. There's been so much going on, so much breaking news, and there have been a lot of important election stories that we need to talk about, even while the climate change bill today, about an hour and a half ago, passed in the House. It was a squeaker. We're going to talk to Desi Doyen momentarily, my co-host on the Green News Report. We're going to get an update on what went on in the House today in this floor fight. But as important as climate change legislation is, and all of this other legislation that's going through the House or not, and Senate or not, election reform bill is going through the Senate, and it will change democracy as we know it in America. For good or for bad, we'll find out. It may make unverifiable voting machines a hell of a lot harder to use, but it won't make them impossible to use, unfortunately. So we're going to talk to Ellen about that in a bit. Sue Wilson, a filmmaker who has a new film out, Broadcast Blues, documentary on the failings of the corporate media. She's going to join us, as will Barry Kendall of the Commonweal Institute, talk about his new, the Commonweal Institute's new fellows program, where they're trying to push back a little bit against the wingnut welfare that goes to guys, liars like John Fund and all the rest on the right to keep them keep their food on their table by paying them money to tell lies in the newspapers. He's going to pay folks just a few dollars, not anything like the wingnut welfare money, to try to get some progressive issues out into the newspapers, into the op-ed sections. And by way of full disclosure, I was just last week asked to be one of their newest fellows at the Commonweal Institute, so I am proud to say I am one happy fellow. Commonweal Institute fellow. I should add that, shouldn't I? I'll add that to my resume as soon as we're done with the program. Count on it. I should also add, by the way, I'm a Project Censored Award winner this year. Haven't really let anybody know about that yet. Our reporting at Brad Blog on the Mike Connell case. Mike Connell was the key GOP IT guru, said to have been involved, a key player in election fraud in Ohio in 2004. He's also the man who ran the email operation for the White House, the emails that disappeared, George Bush's emails. He was being brought in to testify, and he was forced, in fact, to testify the day before the 2008 election. In November, the Monday before that Tuesday election, under threats by, alleged threats by Karl Rove and his gang, who didn't want Mike Connell to talk, wanted him to take the fall for the election fraud that happened in 2004. And so Connell fought his subpoena. He was forced to give his deposition. And about 2 weeks later, Mike Connell died in a single-engine plane craft, a plane crash in his Piper Saratoga on his way home from D.C. back to Ohio for a Christmas party. He was an accomplished pilot, and he went down, and we've been reporting and investigating on that. And Project Censored was kind enough to give us an award this year, Project Censored Award, and they also asked me to write a chapter in their upcoming book on election 2008, which I did. You can look forward to that at some point when it's, I think the book comes out in the fall. So we'll be talking to Barry Kendall, Sue Wilson, Marcy Wheeler, Ellen Tyson, Desi Doyen, all of that up ahead. Today, very quickly, before we get to a break and to the climate legislation fight, it was the last column of Dan Frumkin today in the his White House Watch column at Washington Post. So while the wingnuts continue to write at Washington Post, Dan Frumkin is out. The one guy who for the past 4 or 5 years actually has been reporting on the Bush administration, has been asking questions about going to war while everyone else was either asleep or out there lying on behalf of the president, he was fired. That's enough of that. A commenter at BradBlog brought up an interesting point, suggesting that perhaps Dan Frumkin was fired because he was also reporting and asking questions and investigating Barack Obama. Why? Because Dan Frumkin is not a Republican or a Democrat. He's a journalist. And he asks questions. And he fights corruption. He called what he does accountability journalism. I'm right there with you, Dan. He also talked about the fact that Bush was the, quote, proverbial emperor with no clothes. And he went on today in his final column to say that after 9/11, the nation, including the media, vested Bush with abilities he didn't have and credibility he didn't deserve. Hopefully, the next time the nation faces a grave national crisis, Frumkin writes today, we will listen to the people who were right, not the people who were wrong, and heed those who reported the truth, not those who served as stenographers to liars. And you people know who you are. Brad Friedman, in for Malloy. Back with Desi Doyen, climate change, and more Fox News liars right after this. So seriously, Brad Friedman in for Malloy all night long. Glad to have you with us. Thanks for sticking with us. And we're going to have Ellen Tyson coming up in the next half hour. If you have any calls, questions about election integrity, you can give us a call, 877-520-1150. We will try to get that into the next half hour here. But today, breaking news on the climate change legislation in the House, the Waxman-Markey bill. I'm joined now by my lovely guest host, the managing editor of the, my co-host, the lovely managing editor of the Green News Report, which she and I do several times a week on your favorite friendly radio station. If you don't get it, tell them you want it. News
and you
today,
can find us at greennews.bradblog.com.
Smartly plugged. Now, so we had the Waxman-Markey bill in the House, went to the floor of the House today.
Yeah.
It got ugly, didn't it?
It did. It got pretty heated. The rhetoric was flying fast. The final vote ended up being 219 to 212. The Dems, of course, did get passage of the bill. Eight Republicans crossed over crossed the aisle to vote along with the Democrats, and 44 Democrats voted no.
Against it.
Yes.
Yeah. Now,
yeah.
That was interesting because the Democrats had been basically wrestling with themselves for weeks now, compromising
with themselves,
yeah.
Making concessions to each other, you know, within the Democratic caucus, with the coal states, farm states, fossil fuel states, those that have energy-intensive industries, which understandably are going to be impacted by the changes made in this bill.
And for all of the compromises that they made with those coal state, farm state Democrats, which has caused some
environmental groups, decided that they're not going to support it because they did not support it. Greenpeace, for example, did not support it. And, you know, it's a strange bill when the American Coal Association and Greenpeace together decide they're going to be on the same side of voting against this bill.
Strange coal bedfellows.
Yes, I guess
that was the
way to put it.
The canary in the coal mine, as you once described it. And now, so for all of that, the compromises that the Democrats made with other Democrats, is the thanks they got from those Democrats, that those Democrats still voted against the bill?
In some cases, you know, they were legitimately voting for what they believe are their constituents' best interests. Archer Davis, who is a Democratic representative from Alabama, for example, said he was going to vote no this morning on the C-SPAN because he was saying that, you know, they have strong fossil fuel industries there, strong farming. Now, even though Alabama is going to be particularly vulnerable to the changes in, that we can expect in climate change, he felt the short-term economic cost would be too difficult for his constituents. Other Democrats, freshman Democrats, for example, who are in vulnerable districts, there was some wheeling and dealing going on where Nancy Pelosi and other whips within the majority party were saying that they wanted to get senior Democrats to vote for the bill so that so that vulnerable Democratic freshmen and sophomores would then be able to vote against it and not get slammed come the 2010
my
elections.
My question is, though, for all the gutting of the bill, did at least some of these Democrats who got their way and were able to make this bill less effective, did they at least vote for it? Because,
yes,
you know, after
did.
The stimulus bill, you had all these Republicans that, you know, Barack Obama compromised the hell out of that thing before the Republicans even got to it in hopes of getting the Republicans on board, and then they all said go to hell, and they didn't vote for it.
Most of those Democrats did. I mean, the ones that were on the fence generally swung to the side of voting yes for this bill. Now, and the ones that had worked so hard to weaken it also voted. The Colin Peterson, the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, voted for it. And John Dingell, the chairman emeritus of the House Energy Committee, who had called it a tax, an energy tax that was widely used by Republicans in commercials to bash it, he ended up voting for it as well.
And, well, speaking of Republicans bashing it, here's Michelle Bachmann on the floor of the House.
National energy tax will cost the American
National
people
energy
$2
trillion.
Tax,
she called it.
We know that. We know this was...
Okay, let me stop it there. Will we know that?
We no, because basically that is based on a bogus Heritage Institute, Heritage Foundation study where they misread and miscalculate based on sort of a bogus study.
It won't cost $2,000.
It's not going to cost $2,000
per American or $3,000. The number went up to $3,000.
Right, they're using various bogus numbers to say this, whereas the Congressional Budget Office, nonpartisan, came out with a different calculation that says it will really only cost American families an average across the board of $175 a year.
Will result
Here's
in a
more.
Loss of 2.5 million jobs every year for the American people.
Is that right?
Again, that is based on bogus numbers from the Heritage
Let's
Foundation.
We know that. We know this will result in a reduced standard of living for Americans.
All right, she goes on to call it tyranny, this bill. Michelle Bachmann, she's crazy. This bill ain't going to get through the Senate anyway, is it, Des?
We're going to have some trouble with that, yeah.
Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Ellen Tyson right after this. This is rockin'. Michelle Bachmann on the floor of the House today calling climate legislation
of the federal government.
Tyranny.
Mr. Forbes' amendment represents liberty for the American people. It's our choice. What will we choose today?
What will we?
Will we choose liberty or will we choose tyranny? I choose Mr. Forbes' amendment.
Gentlemen, time has expired.
She calls climate legislation tyranny. It's the end of the world as we know it. Guess we should have queued up that song, eh? Brad Friedman back on the Malloy Show. Woo, I'm caffeined up tonight. Ellen Tyson from VotersUnite.org is going to join us in a moment, but Desi Doyen wanted to finish up a few points we got knocked out for time there that we wanted to make on this climate legislation and the Republicans, these arguments, these specious arguments they were making against this bill.
Yeah, the jobs killer idea was something that came out last week after the Congressional Budget Office came out with its own scoring of what would happen for American families. And I just wanted to clarify that the $175 per family per year, until only until 2020, so only in the next 11 years or so that was going to be an average. Now, for poor families, people who make less than $50,000 a year, that the poor families will actually earn $40 based on the rebates and incentives that will come from the bill. Rich families, that's people who earn over $100,000 a year, it would still only cost them less than a dollar a day, about 63 cents a day. It works out to be about $245 a year, not the $3,100, the $3,000 that Republicans were saying that was going. That's based on an MIT study that the Republicans purposely misrepresented and distorted the numbers. In fact, the study's authors contacted the Republicans in the House and said, please stop misusing my study. That's not what it says.
And instead of stopping using it, what they did was they grew it. Because as I recall, a few weeks ago, it was going to cost every American $1,600. Was it per month or per year?
It was per year.
Right? $1,600. Then it went up to $2,000. Today, it was $3,000 for every American. It was going to end manufacturing and everything in this country, ship all of our jobs to China and India.
Which was particularly interesting when you look at the shouting. It was like shouting into the wind, watching all the people come up and talk on the House floor today. One of the things Tim Ryan, the Democrat from Ohio, was screaming, he said, what are you people talking about? We already lost those jobs to overseas. China and India were already given those jobs and because you let them take
them. Exactly. They didn't care. They let them do it over these how many years with their free trade, what they put no restrictions on. They watched these jobs go all over the world, and they didn't give a damn.
Indeed. Now, a report by the Center for American Progress and the University of Massachusetts showed that investing $150 billion in clean energy would create an estimated 1.7 million new jobs. Now, that's three times more jobs than you would find from a similar investment in fossil fuels. Also, John Larson, Democrat of Connecticut, gave one of the best speeches. He's from Hartford. He yelled about all the money that we're already sending overseas. He said, come on, people, that's the real tax that we're paying because of our increasing addiction to foreign oil. This challenge has been here for 30 years. We've been talking about this for 30 years, and you did nothing. And he pointed to the other side of the aisle. He said, we've got to stop this addiction. We've got to stop funding our enemies' efforts against our own troops. And then lastly, the best part, I thought, was Charlie Rangel, who's the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. One of his things, he said, when the Republican Party becomes the protector of the poor, that is a great day.
Indeed. Well done, Mr. Rangel. That hot climate legislation passed today, 219 to 212 in the House, and now goes to the Senate.
Where it's expected to face a very tough
battle. Well, Inhofe has already said, we ain't going to let it pass. You had one more point, and then I got to get to
Alex. I just want to say that unlike in the House, where a simple majority is all that's needed to pass legislation, the Senate does need 60 votes from its 100 members to end debate rather than continue to filibuster. And it depends on whether or not Democratic Senator, now I guess Al Franken, whether or not he's going to be seated by then. They want to bring this for a vote, hopefully by September in the Senate.
And no news yet on Al Franken. I thought it might come this week. He did win, of course, that election. We're just waiting for the Minnesota Supreme Court to agree and order him to go to the Senate, order Governor Tim Pawlenty to sign that certificate, which I'm confident, frankly, they will. And then Franken will be there. But even at that, it's going to be tough to get this in the House. Thank you, Desi Doyen. Much appreciate that. Moving topics slightly now to my first guest here, Ellen Tyson, the founder of VotersUnite.org, the publisher of the indispensable daily voting news, which you can read at Bradblog, of course, every day, or VotersUnite.org, or many other fine publications. She joins us to talk about, now that we've gotten through climate legislation in one House, now we're moving on to election reform legislation, maybe at some point. Ellen Tyson, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, thank you. Wow, Desi is really cool, isn't she?
Isn't she cool?
Yeah, she is.
I'm leaving. After I'm done with your interview, she's going to take the last 2 hours.
I don't blame you. Yeah, wow, she's amazing.
I agree. Okay, so this Rush Holt bill, and we got a lot of election news we need to try to fly through in our limited time here, but this Rush Holt, congressman from New Jersey, he's trying yet again with his, what does he call this, Ellen? Increased voter
confidence and increased accessibility.
Bill, yeah. And now it has improved, I think you and I would both agree, over the bills that that he's put forward over the last couple of, well, what, about three or four congressional sessions.
It has. Well, you know, last year, was it last year? You and I and some other people worked really, really hard to get it to include a ban on DREs, and we were told, no way, no way, no way.
Impossible. It can't happen. Congress will never agree to it.
No, absolutely not. Nobody will.
And for folks who don't know, DRE is a direct recording electronic. It's a touchscreen, generally a touchscreen voting machine that records your votes, tabulates them. It's 100% unverifiable whether it has these so-called paper trails, these VVPATs, they call them, voter verifiable paper audit trails. Whether it has one of those or not, it's 100% unverifiable, antithetical to democracy, should never be used. Last year, Holt said, hey, it's impossible. We can't pass a DRE ban yet this year, Ellen.
That's in the bill.
Go figure.
I know. Very cool.
And we were told last year, by the way, that we had to accept that bill as it was because forget about a DRE ban, you'll never get it. And we drew a line in the sand. We said, no, we're not going to even consider voting, supporting a bill that does not ban DREs. And what do you know? This time we got a ban on DREs. Does that teach us a lesson about standing up for principles and letting the congressmen and those folks catch up with the folks who are right?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's important to do exactly that. And when there are significant problems with a bill, you know, I get really, really tired of hearing, well, it's not a perfect bill. Well, okay, no bill is perfect, but that used as an excuse for this bill has serious flaws. And serious flaws are different from not perfect.
Well, that's right. And now, so it has gotten better. They will ban DREs eventually, not until 2014, right? Is that the new number? So it will ban them.
You can have the paper trail DREs, which I don't know that that's all that much better than the paperless one.
No, it's not. It's 100% unverifiable, Ellen. But you can't, as of 2014, even the DREs with the paper trails will be permanently banned.
Right. So
correct?
Everybody will have a paper ballot that is either marked by themselves or, assuming that they are unable to mark a paper ballot by themselves, marked by a ballot marking device.
Right. Those fine devices made by the same voting machine companies that last year, when I went to vote in June in the California primary, misprinted 4 out of 12 of my votes.
Right.
Yeah, and they were, and by the way, that machine was made essentially for blind people who would have never been able to notice that 4 out of 12 of the votes were misprinted.
Right.
So, it's pretty incredible. But okay, so by 2014, we will have a paper ballot for every vote cast in America with his bill, correct?
Assuming the bill passes, yes.
Assuming
and
it passes.
And by 2014, every single jurisdiction in the United States will have to replace or upgrade its accessible equipment in every polling place by 2014.
Accessible, you mean for disabled voters,
or
blind voters, and so forth?
People who are disabled, yes.
Now, why do they have to upgrade their, and I suspect I would put, you may be putting that in air quotes, upgrade. Why do they need to upgrade by 2014 for the accessible accessibility voters?
Because there are a couple of disability advocates who insisted that the bill include a provision that eliminates the need for people to do manual handling of the ballot, which means that the accessible device, the device for people with disabilities, would have to not only accept all their choices, mark them correctly on the ballot, but then it would have to deposit the ballot into a ballot box automatically.
Pick up the ballot and put it in so that the voter doesn't have to intercede at all. The theory being that this is for privacy and independence.
Well, no, actually,
or something.
This is for independence. This has nothing to do with privacy. If it's deposited into a privacy sleeve and then someone else deposits them for it, that takes care of the privacy issue.
But
this is for independence. This is for something that is absolutely not necessary for a private vote.
And isn't this really a poison pill, Ellen Tyson, that these advocates who have been in favor of touchscreen, 100% unverifiable voting for so many years, isn't this really just a poison pill that they've inserted into this document at this, into this bill at this point?
Well, I hope it's a poison pill. I don't know. I don't hear a lot of people talking about it.
I mean, because I think they want to continue with the crap that we have, the stuff that doesn't work.
They would like to continue with the DREs.
Yeah.
Yes. They would like to continue with the DREs, and so let's make sure that we get everything as computerized as we possibly can. But look at every polling place in the United States would have to have different accessibility equipment by 2014, every single one of them. And such a machine does not yet exist.
And that's right. What they require that picks up the ballot, that puts it in the box, this machine doesn't even exist. And we're talking about a lot of jurisdictions who have already been forced, because of the Help America Vote Act of 2002, this crappy bill, have already been forced to buy new equipment for disabled voters. Now they're going to have to scrap that and buy another. All right, I want to move on to a related point here, but before I do, the New York Times earlier this week on Monday endorsed the Holt bill, and they noted that, quote, Mr. Holt's bill would require paper ballots to be used for every vote cast in November 2010. Ellen Tyson of VotersUnite.org, are they correct or are they not correct?
No, they're not correct.
Right.
That is a complete misrepresentation of the bill.
And I told them about it. I blogged, of course, a brand blog about it. I sent them a letter demanding a correction. No correction has been issued at last I checked.
We pointed that out in Daily Voting News,
right,
as well, hoping that they would pick up on the fact that they misrepresented the bill.
And have
you know, I mean, there could be a lot of people out there thinking, yay, we'll have all paper ballots by 2010, not realizing not so.
The New York Times was wrong, and I would encourage folks to write to the New York Times and get them to ask them to correct that error in their editorial endorsement where they said that the bill would require paper ballots for every vote cast in November 2010. That is an utter lie if they said it on purpose. It's an error if they didn't bother to read the bill, because it's just not true. And the New York Times is the paper of record. People rely on that paper and their endorsement. And the Holt folks have been pointing folks to the New York Times endorsement. They didn't bother to correct them either, did they? I got to take a quick break, Ellen Tyson. We're going to talk about what went on in Tennessee. Speaking of fighting against touchscreens, Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Ellen Tyson of VotersUnite.org. More of her after this, and then Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel follows thereafter. Stay with us.
What is wrong? And the evidence is clear.
That's what we're doing.
You won't go telling me.
No, you won't.
Our vote don't matter anymore.
Brad Friedman back on the Mike Malloy Show, speaking with Ellen Tyson of VotersUnite.org, fighting for our democracy. I hope you will join me. I hope New York Times will join me. I hope they'll correct their incorrect editorial. And I hope they will bother to notice that while they're complaining about democracy in Iran, they didn't give a damn when democracy went south here in our elections year after year, and we're still facing that now. Now, speaking of fighting for our democracy, Ellen Tyson, the folks down in Tennessee, they had a victory this week, or last week, I believe, explain their bill. Their bill would require paper ballots for every voter by 2010, correct?
I'm sorry. sorry.
Oh,
what?
Did I lose you? Oh.
Yeah, for just a minute there,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay, well, I was talking about the bill down in Tennessee. They passed a bill last year that would require paper ballots for every voter in Tennessee where they almost to a man and woman use touchscreen voting systems, as I recall. This would require a paper ballot. It was passed last year in their legislature. This year, the Republicans... I guess got a new majority down there, and they tried to stop it. Were they successful?
They weren't. They were successful in the House. Actually, I think it was passed in 2005. And the bill to delay it was passed in the House, 7320. But then when it went to the Senate, it lost in the Senate by one vote. Senator Tim Burchett, who is a Republican, voted against it because he's in favor of fair elections.
And democracy and stuff like that.
Stuff
and being
like
able
that.
To count your votes and see your votes and transparency, because that's what we didn't have in Iran. When you hide the votes, when you hide the vote counting, it all goes away. And you certainly don't stand a chance when you're using touchscreen voting machines. And I know the activists down there in Tennessee worked really hard to get that one vote to stop this bill from being essentially killed. They passed the bill, and this one would have undone all of their hard work. So
right, and today there was an article in the paper about Shelby County Commissioner Steve Mulroy is now pressing his county election commission to begin the switch to opscan. So they're looking at actually implementing the bill that was passed in 2005.
Well, go figure. Now, op scans are not the greatest either because they also count in secret, but at least there is a paper ballot that reflects the voter intent.
Right.
And that's the first step. We got to start somewhere.
That's right.
Okay, I don't know if you can do this in a minute, but can you explain what happened in Florida this week in 1 minute, Ellen Tyson?
Oh, well, I can talk about the report that they did down there about the Kitty Garber did that report about the ESNS, Election Systems and Software, Optical Scanner, DS200.
That's the company who makes this OpScan machine, yeah.
Right, and the machine actually encourages overvoting, whereas the optical scanners are supposed to warn people against overvoting.
And an overvote is where you vote for too many candidates in a race.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. And so when you insert your ballot into the DS200, the report shows, what it does is it immediately starts beeping like crazy, and it displays a screen that tells you in real tiny letters that you overvoted, which a lot of people wouldn't know, as you described to the audience what it meant, just in case people didn't know.
Yeah.
It says you overvoted, and then it presents you with a big red button that says, that has a big red X on it and says, don't cast, return, and a big green button that says, accept, with a check mark on it. And so the psychology is all for pressing the accept button to get the beeping to stop because you want your vote accepted.
Which is why we had so many overvotes down there in Florida this year. All right, crappy
Flawed
machines.
Equipment.
Yes.
In one, yet one more way.
Don't blame
Flawed
the voters.
Equipment.
Blame the equipment. Ellen Tyson of VotersUnite.org. Thanks. Much appreciated. Marcy Wheeler, right after this. In for Mike Malloy. of bradblog.com, your friendly investigative citizen journalist, blogger, muckraker, troublemaker, joined by another one of those in a moment. Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel is going to be joining me. We're going to be taking your calls all this hour on, stuff like accountability. Remember that Dan Frumkin mentioned in his final column today when he was fired by the Washington Post because he was too damn good. He called it accountability journalism. While all of the wingnut right-wing liars get to stay at the Washington Post, the once vital Washington Post, well, let's just say it is less so today. And in fact, Dan Frumkin recognized Marcy Wheeler in his final column for her fine investigative blogging. Dan has always been frankly, paying attention to the blogosphere while so many others were out there dismissing it. So credit where it's due, and we look forward to Dan's reemergence somewhere at some paper, who will be far better off for his presence there. She's going to join us and take your calls on all manners of accountability. Bush accountability, yes, Obama accountability. She is independent, as am I. And, we call out the bad guys as we see them. Speaking of bad guys, very quickly, I want to play you this clip from Ann Coulter. Was on Fox News today talking about cap and trade, and let me just give you a quick response. Well, here's what she had to say.
All right, Ann, let me start with you on this whole cap and trade situation. It looks like it will pass the House. What will happen in the Senate, and why did Al Gore not show up yesterday to talk about it?
He was too busy turning out the lights in his 8,000 square foot home, flying private someplace. With hypocrisy in the air right now, let's just talk about the real hypocrites.
Good. Let's talk about the real hypocrites. Ann Coulter, sitting there on Fox News today, sitting on Bill O'Reilly on Fox News last week, sitting on Glenn Beck's show the day before. Let's talk about hypocrisy. Let's talk about all of the hours that Fox News has spent on nonsense concerning Acorn, claiming voter fraud by Acorn, voter fraud that doesn't exist. Not one indictment, not one admission, not one charge of voter fraud by Acorn. Voter registration fraud, yes, but not by Acorn, by their employees, by their workers. This is, of course, the equivalent of someone who works at Walmart who goes out and shoots someone saying that Walmart is a murderer. No, it wasn't Acorn who was committing voter registration fraud. It was their workers. A handful of them, and the reason we even know about it is because Acorn themselves turned them in. Get it straight. No, Acorn did not commit voter fraud. Acorn did not even commit voter registration fraud. A couple of workers defrauded Acorn. Now, the reason I mention this in regard to Fox News and Ann Coulter is because she did commit voter fraud. She did commit voter fraud down in Florida. You can go to bradblog.com/CoulterFraud and see the documents where she lied on her voter registration form, where she went and voted knowingly. And she was a constitutional attorney at one point. I notice she doesn't call herself that anymore. She was a constitutional attorney, and she lied on her voter registration form in Florida, and she knowingly voted at the wrong precinct in Florida. And the only reason she got off the hook is because her FBI, her former FBI boyfriend, called the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, interceded, and said, she had to lie because she's being stalked by a guy named Dan Borchers, who is a Christian conservative and who happens to be a guest blogger at the Brad Blog. That got her off the hook there, but it didn't get her off the hook for the charges that were filed, the complaint that was filed in January of this year for voter fraud again by Ann Coulter in the state of Connecticut, and the state of Connecticut has now taken 5 months to look at these charges. Brad Blog spoke with them recently. They said that the case is still pending. They would not explain the reason for the length of time, because essentially it takes just there's two questions that need to be answered. Did Ann Coulter vote in Connecticut In 2002 and 2004, and was she living in New York City at the time? Was that her permanent residence? Pretty easy to establish, and in fact, the Connecticut State Elections Enforcement Commission has, in fact, come to completion on a very similar case to Coulter's, someone who voted illegally from New York, absentee, in just a matter of two or three months. Why is it taking Ann Coulter's case so long? Is she going to skate again? I don't know. I promise you, we will keep our eyes on it, but that's hypocrisy, Miss Coulter, Fox News, and the fact that you guys have her on and never, never ask her a question about her own voter fraud that she did commit over and over again. And, oh, yeah, you don't bring up the young political majors, the firm who's the head of the firm, pled guilty last week to voter registration fraud himself. Who is he? He was hired by the California GOP to do voter registration for Republicans. And in fact, his case in he is alleged, his company is alleged to have changed thousands of voter registrations from Democratic to Republican. And therefore, Democrats showed up last year at the primaries and couldn't cast a vote. Fox News must have forgotten to talk about that. I spoke about it when I was on Fox News last October, right as this guy was arrested, and I gave a Fox News alert on the air. I suspect they wouldn't have covered it at all because they were too busy covering Acorn, which was, bunch of nonsense. All right. Got that out of my system. No nonsense here. Marcy Wheeler joins us, the master blogger. Should that be mistress blogger? I don't know. Master blogger, otherwise known as Empty Wheel, over at her great blog, Empty Wheel. She's the author of Anatomy of Deceit, How the Bush Administration Used the Media to Sell the Iraq War. Did they really? Who knew? Marcy, you were, as I said, appropriately recognized today in Frumkin's final column for your fine investigative blogging. I concur. Welcome to the Malloy Show, Marcy. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
You bet. Now, before we get to things that actually matter, and I should mention, two points. One, this is now a Michael Jackson-free zone. And two, we have an open thread at Brad Blog. You can stop on by there and discuss the show, and I'll try to keep my eyes on it. And I'm also trying to keep my eyes on the open thread over at DU, the Truth Seekers hanging out there. Okay, that's it. Here's the easy question, Marcy. Why Empty Wheel? What the hell does that mean?
My middle initial is T.
Uh-huh. Brilliant.
But everyone thinks it's all Zen, which kind of makes it six times a Zen.
You're right. Very cool. Okay, thank you for getting that out of the way. Now, a couple of breaking news today out of the White House, and we'll beat up on Obama in a moment, but I picked up on something you wrote today about torture, because you've been great in plowing through these legal documents of all kinds, whether it's on torture, Valerie Plame, anything else. And let me just read something you quoted from the president concerning torture. Here's what you highlighted. A statement from the president says, I call on all governments to join with the United States and the community of law-abiding nations in prohibiting, investigating, and prosecuting all acts of torture. No people, no matter where they reside, should have to live in fear of their own government. Nowhere should the midnight knock foreshadow a nightmare of state-commissioned crime. Strong statement. It's good to hear the president say that, but there's a hitch here, isn't there, Marcy?
2003.
George W. Bush.
The president said that in 2003, and Bush said that within weeks, maybe days, before he signed. After he said that publicly, the CIA kind of lost it and said, hold on a second, we're torturing for you. How can you go out there and say we're going to prosecute torturers? So they forced him to sign what was then the very first document, policy document, saying, yeah, the White House approves of all the torture they're doing, you know, overseas and what have you. Amazing words, but of course, completely a lie. But what do you expect from George Bush?
And this was a public statement, right? This convention, because today, I should point out, as you did, today marks the anniversary of the Convention Against torture. This is the UN 1984 convention, was it?
Yeah, it's the 25th. It went into action 22 years ago.
And at the time, Reagan signed it originally, right. And he was very tough on the idea of torture and accountability, wasn't he?
Right. I mean, this goes back to, you know, what the Republicans claim they used to be, but no longer.
And as a matter of fact, George Bush himself also said just before he launched war on Iraq, you remember the video, and I don't have it here at my fingertips, but he had said that war crimes will not be tolerated, war criminals will be prosecuted, and using the excuse that you were just following orders will not get you off the hook.
Well, and that what you just read, that same statement, what I clipped out, Bush was talking about Saddam Hussein, the evil torturer. So he was using the fact that Saddam Hussein tortured as his reason to go into Iraq in June 2003 when we were beginning to lose the war over there.
And how do you explain then, I guess, well, just to somewhat turn the page, you then quote what our current president had to say today in marking the, 25 years ago, you're right. He said, Barack Obama said, 25 years ago, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Convention Against Torture, and 22 years ago this very day, the convention entered into force. The United States' leading role in the negotiation of the convention and its subsequent ratification and implementation enjoyed strong bipartisan support. Okay. So he's recognizing we have this convention. How does he square that circle, Marcy, that he does not appear to be taking any action and has said he wants to look forward, not back?
Well, and I'll read from further in the quote. The United States will continue to cooperate with governments and civil society organizations throughout the international community in the fight to end torture. To this end, I have requested today that the Department of State solicit information from all of our diplomatic missions around the world about effective policies and programs for stopping torture. The Department of State. Not the Department of Justice. So what the president is doing after in the middle of the United States exposing that it has been torturing since 2002, the president is saying, here's how we're going to solve it. We're going to go to the Department of State and have them continue to make reports about all of the other torturers out here. But we're not going to look at ourselves.
We're not going to go to
Department of Justice, who is the single most important agency in deterring and punishing torture.
Much more on this straight ahead with Marcy Wheeler. Give us a call if you'd like to get in a question. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Not Mike's usual number. You got to use that one. Brad Friedman in for Malloy with Marcy Wheeler. Much more after this. Some angry music there, Tony. I like it. Good job. Brad Friedman in for Malloy, speaking with Marcy Wheeler of Empty Wheel. I ran way long on my last segment. My apologies, Marcy. So we're going to have a short one here, but then we'll have plenty of time for your calls, everyone's calls, after the bottom of the hour here. Give us a shout, 877-520-1150. We're talking about accountability, crime, stuff like that. And since this is such a tiny segment here before we have to go to the break, let's jump over to the other side of the aisle for a second. Monica Conyers pleads guilty. Monica Conyers? Who's that, Marcy Wheeler?
Monica is John Conyers' wife. She is did not resign today, even though she pled guilty, a city council member, and she wasn't she was president pro tem after Kwame Kilpatrick stepped down, so she was a fairly serious senior city council member, but she admitted
in Detroit,
that she
right?
had in Detroit. Yeah, so it's and actually the scandal that this is involved with also looks to implicate Kwame and his father as well. So it's everybody. I mean, it's Detroit.
What did she admit to?
Accepting a bribe to switch her vote about a waste contract that the city was getting into. So she was going to vote against it. They gave her money, and she flipped her vote.
Go ahead, Marcy.
It became clear about a year ago or sometime last year that the investigation was headed towards her and towards Kwame and his father. So it's been a while in coming, and she's been in plea deal negotiations, I think, for 2 weeks with the feds, and that's where we're at.
Now, does this take away the moral high ground for the U.S. House Judiciary Chair John Conyers, who attended a forum this morning on accountability, calling for the Department of Justice to investigate political prosecutions over the last 8 years by the Bush administration? He was there, I believe he was scheduled to show up this morning. I don't know if he was there or not. Does it hurt his moral authority in this matter?
I'm not entirely sure, and I've been thinking about that for quite a while. It kind of popped up when Jennifer Granholm was under consideration to be the SCOTUS appointee, the Supreme Court justice nominee. Mm-hmm. And Conyers actually very publicly withdrew his recommendation for Granholm, saying she's endorsed this U.S. attorney or assistant U.S. attorney, and it's a terrible person.
Mm-hmm.
And it never became clear who the U.S. attorney was, but my immediate take, and that of several other people, because I'm in Michigan, was, is this related to Monica Conyers' investigation? Beyond that, you know, it's clear there were politicized prosecutions under Bush. This doesn't appear to be one, but, I don't know whether it taints Conyers. I really don't.
All right, we'll get your opinion on that. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy. More with Marcy Wheeler right after this.
Now he's in a rock and roll outfit and everything's all right. Don't you know? Johnny told his mama,
you're going to love this. Just love it.
Mike Malloy here, interrupting Brad Friedman's most excellent program. Wait, it's my program, and Brad is filling in. Uh-oh, but he's so good at this. Hey, I'll be back June 29th, and not a moment too soon.
What does he mean by that, not a moment too soon? He'll be back Monday. We're here today, 877-520. 1150. 877-520-1150. Stuck in the middle with you. No place I would rather be with you and with Marcy Wheeler of the great Empty Wheel. You can check out her blog at emptywheel.firedoglake.com. All right, we're going to get to your calls in a second. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. But before we get to those calls, Marcy, you have been working your fingers to the bone for years on this Valerie Plame case. We had news last week that the Supreme Court denied Joe and Valerie Wilson's appeal, essentially, to have their case heard. Give me the quick rundown on why their case was thrown out in the first place and if they have any recourse hereafter.
Their case was basically thrown out because the original judge ruled that there was another way for Valerie to have gotten some kind of some kind of recourse, and she didn't use that and therefore couldn't go after the legal means that they were doing in this case. And as well, there was an earlier Supreme Court decision this year which said you need to be very specific about what a government official did to you if you want to get over the bar to be able to sue them, because otherwise they have protection. And it's not that surprising that this, that the original ruling was upheld at the appeals court and at the Supreme Court. It was a tough case to make, and I'm not sure the case was originally made as strongly as it should have been. And no, they don't have recourse at this point. I mean, they have no way of getting any kind of, you know, reimbursement or anything from Cheney and the others who ruined her career. There is one kind of good piece of news, and it's that Judge Sullivan in Washington, D.C., sounds like he is very skeptical of the government's efforts to keep Cheney's FBI interview materials secret. And you'll recall that he was interviewed as part of the investigation, and it was not a grand jury interview, which means it is not protected by grand jury secrecy at all, and therefore should be FOIA-able. It should be releasable as is. And Mukasey and then the Obama administration have said, oh, golly, we can't give this to you because if we do, then vice presidents won't cooperate in criminal investigations in the future, which is a load of horse dung, in my opinion.
Was this where they made the argument that if this is released, that Jon Stewart will make fun of it on the Daily Show? This was one of the reasons?
Yeah, and the First Amendment in this country is about what? It's about, you know, having the ability to make fun or to criticize our elected and unelected leaders, as you would say, unelected,
right,
in this case, when they do terrible things. And, you know, what I suspect is in that, what I don't suspect, given when that interview happened, it happened in probably early June 2004.
Mm-hmm.
I don't suspect that Fitzgerald just came out and asked Dick Cheney, did you order Scooter Libby to leak Valerie Plame's identity to Judy Miller? That's what all of the evidence suggests happened. I suspect he kind of went about that question a little less directly, saying, you know, did you order Scooter Libby to leak the NIE to Judy Miller? Scooter Libby says it may have been Judy Miller, but the evidence wasn't all, and we didn't have the evidence from Judy Miller that she had in fact been leaked the identity. So it'll be damning if and when it comes out.
Well, I hope that Judge Sullivan is properly skeptical of this argument that we can't release it because guys like Jon Stewart will make fun of it on The Daily Show. Hope he's not buying that nonsense. But, you know, is there any chance that even if this material is released, I don't think that Patrick Fitzgerald ever... Did he officially close the investigation, or didn't he somehow leave the door open that if something comes up that it could be revisited?
Yeah, he left the door open, and then the other thing that we got this week is that Crew, or actually it was 2 weeks ago, Crew got some of the documents relating to the missing White House emails.
Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Okay, go ahead.
Right. And it happens to be the same entity which took the lawsuit for the Wilsons, but the White House emails were not definitely connected to the Plame investigation, but what we got 2 weeks ago made it really clear that they are. The most interesting thing I found is that right after Rove kind of pulled this email that he had sent to Stephen Hadley out of his hat as his excuse for all of a sudden remembering that he had spoken to Matt Cooper,
which seems to have gotten him off the hook at the last second from his indictments.
It ended up getting him off the hook.
Right.
But of course, that hadn't been turned over in the initial searches. The night that he testified, that Rove testified, and so the night that Fitzgerald got those emails, somebody went in and in the middle of the night was doing searches through Stephen Hadley's emails, and they look very suspicious. They
really?
Look like somebody, because anybody had access, anybody in the White House had access to these email, basically logs, and it, you know, it looked very suspicious. You can kind of track who was, you know, like there was a search for Novak emails 10 days after Novak had given a third or fourth or fifth deposition to Fitzgerald in fall of 2004. So you can kind of track when the official searches were coming in, but that Hadley one looked really really dicey.
Well, it seems a long shot at best, but there remains a chance, I suppose, that somehow this could get reopened. But otherwise, I mean, it's looking to me that, you know, what they shut down Valerie and Joe Wilson's case, Scooter Libby essentially walked because Bush let him go. They could never get a Cheney. We know for a fact that they outed a covert agent, the CIA asset, which George Bush's own father had called one of the most insidious of crimes years ago. It looks like there will be no accountability for that historic crime that has never occurred in this country before.
Well, and the reason it's important, too, is because the model that Cheney used in outing Valerie Plame
uh-huh.
is the same model that he used in implementing torture. And so I can tell you that except for some of the things that Cheney said to Congress later in the process, 2005, 2006, when he was trying to talk them into keeping torture legal, I can tell you that Cheney is going to be similarly firewalled from what he did as he was in outing Valerie Plame, so that unless somebody like David Addington decides to flip and out Cheney's role or or somebody else, I suspect that, you know, you can go after the John Hughes of the world. You can maybe get to John Rizzo, the lawyer in the CIA. You can maybe get to
the attorneys who allowed all of this to happen, essentially, by writing these nonsense memos that let this stuff move forward.
Right, and the attorneys, Rizzo, in his case, somebody represented to Department of Justice that Abu Zubaydah wouldn't speak except with torture. We now know that that was a lie. And so if we can hold people responsible for those lies. But I don't, you know, again, I think we're going to find out that Cheney really firewalled himself with really incredibly loyal people who will do what Scooter Libby did, which was take the call.
It would be really nice to have some accountability. That's not revenge. That's accountability. That's holding people accountable for crimes and every crime. When Obama said, we don't want to look forward, we don't want to look back, we want to look forward. Crimes, by their nature, you have to look back. I robbed a bank yesterday, so I would be looking back if I was prosecuted. Let me get to a call. Glenda in Claremont, California. Glenda, you have a thought for Marcy Wheeler.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to know, how does she spell that M-T wheel? Is it E-M-T-wheel?
Huh? E-M-P-T-Y. So opposite of full.
E-M-T-T-Y.
T as in Peter, T as in Tom, Y.
E-M-P-T-T-Y or E-M-T-T-Y?
Empty, like the word empty. Empty wheel. .firedoglake.com. You'll find her there.
Okay, empty wheel, run together.
Yep.
Okay, well, let me make a quick comment on the Valerie Plame situation. As long as Obama is shielding and his injustice department, his new injustice department is going to shield these crooks, then it's going to be like a rat on a wheel. You can't present a case because, gee, we can't give you the evidence. Well, why can't you give me the evidence? Because it's secrets, state secrets. It'll endanger national security. So you go round and round and round. I am so disgusted with Obama, I cannot begin to tell you. But let me ask you this. This was another question.
Very quickly.
I thought she said that Obama was using the same language as Bush on torture. And I want to bring up, let her answer that in a minute.
I got to give you, one question from Marcy. I got to move on, Glenda. I'm sorry.
That's the question, because on angryarab.blogspot.com, we found out that he was actually using Bush's exact language on the Middle East.
Thanks, Glenda. I appreciate that. Is Obama using the same justifications for this stuff, Marcy?
You know, he's going to call it indefinite detention. He's going to come up with a new euphemism for it. But I have to say, the statement today that we were reading earlier in the show was one of the most frustrating things I've seen from him. Just to suggest that you would go after torture with the State Department and not the Justice Department or the Injustice Department, as your caller called it, is absolutely ludicrous, and it just spits in the face of the entire notion of justice. And so It's very hard. You know, I understand that he's trying to close Gitmo. I understand that he's fighting with Congress over doing just that. But it's very hard to take him very seriously when he comes out with this farcical statement and says, I'll put the State Department in charge of getting rid of torture.
Yep, it's real damn frustrating. All of this is. We're taking your calls, 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. If you have a question for the great Marcy Wheeler, Brad in for Malloy. Take a quick break. More of your calls right after this.
One day she and I, she's going for a ride. What a pistol and a sword by her side. She rolled right up to my front door. Born through a party in the county jail.
Will anybody ever go to jail? This Bush administration, the most corrupt in history. And boy, it looks like these guys are going to walk. Let me get to a call. We're joined with, give us a call. 877-520-1150. 877-520-1150. Don't call Mike Malloy's regular number. He ain't going to answer. He's in Florida. He'll be back Friday. Feel free to give us a call. And by the way, he'll be back Monday. Thank you. And we will take your calls even if you disagree with us. We can handle it. I can. I'm sure Marcy can. Marcy Wheeler from Empty Wheel joins me for our last few minutes here. Marcy, you want to get to another call here?
Sure.
All right. Eric in Long Beach, California. Welcome to the Malloy Show. Eric, what's on your mind?
Hey, Brad, Marcy. Thanks for taking the call. Real quick, military tribunals come under military law. Military law was written specifically for the Department of Defense that used to be called the Department of War. After World War II in 46-47, it was converted to the Department of Defense because of the Geneva Conventions that outlawed aggressive wars. Title 10, which is for the Department of Defense, that incorporates the Uniform Code of Military Justice that was written specifically for DOD, has been moved out of DOD, Department of Defense, and into Homeland Security.
Can you phrase that in the form of a question, Eric?
Well, and I don't know if Marcy's aware of this or if you are, Brad, but what they've done is they've taken military law out of the Department of Defense that it was written for and are now using it in Homeland Security.
All right. Thanks for that thought. Marcy, have any thoughts on that? I'm not sure what to make of it.
I'm not sure exactly what to make of it, but I think under Bush, you saw this kind of conflation of what had been intelligence, what had been investigative, and what had been defense-related, and they all became one, and that's where our legal problems started. And this, you know, this is, again, more of the same, but then you also have to worry about how this is going to get applied to domestic people who are so-called terrorists unless they want to bomb abortion clinics or go after federal judges.
Yeah. Have you heard any of the right-wingers who were so in favor of torture before because of this supposed ticking time bomb fantasy that they all had? Have you heard any of those right-wingers calling for the torture of Scott Roeder, who shot George Tiller, the doctor in Kansas, in the head, and then said that there are further attacks planned, the actual ticking time bomb scenario that these cowardly wingnuts were so worried about? Have you heard any of them calling for the waterboarding of Scott Roeder, Marcy?
Not a peep.
How odd. Who would have thunk it? Well, speaking of sort of messing with the laws here, in what Obama did in ordering this indefinite detention, essentially, he's come up with basically five different ways to deal with these Guantanamo prisoners. And when he can't get them either by a criminal trial, a military tribunal, a transfer to another country, releasing them entirely, he'll just indefinitely detain them. It seems like the president is trying to have it all ways. I think Glenn Greenwald said that basically they're only going to bring these guys to court if they know they can win. That doesn't seem to be playing fair, does it?
Yeah, well, and I think, I mean, the one person that they have brought to court, or that is in court right now, the big name, Gailani, is somebody who they had indicted for, I hope I get this right, for the African bombings.
Uh-huh.
And so it was all pre-torture. And it's sort of telling that they only can bring one person so far, and everything else has been tainted by torture. But even in that Daphne Linzer has a breaking story out tonight about the Obama administration thinking they're going to do this via executive order, which is nuts. And she, at the very end of her story, and it's very interesting, she says that they are thinking of Walid bin Attash as the kind of person who would be a candidate, if I hate to use that word, but the kind of person who would be the kind of person that they would, you know, use indefinite detention for. And there's all sorts of problems with it because, they're partly saying, well, we can't bring him to any kind of justice because the evidence we have against him came from al-Nashiri, one of the three people who was waterboarded. But when you look closer at it, it seems like their problem has as much to do with their partners overseas and the evidence that they were getting from them on the coal bombing in 2000, and that this indefinite detention is going to cover up not just torture, but the fact that our allies were unwilling to work with us on investigating the coal bombing.
Well, with 30 seconds here, Marcy, if we don't have the evidence, or if the evidence is tainted, even folks that we believe to be dangerous, what do we do? Let them go?
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, I think that in this case, I mean, Walid bin Attash, they do have evidence, or they did say they had evidence on him for the African bombings. So why not just try him on the African bombings rather mm-hmm. than insisting on getting him for the coal bombings and through this crazy illegal means?
Well, yeah, fair enough. But there's a whole bunch of other ones that are sitting there facing that same question. Never Enough Time with Marcy Wheeler. Marcy Wheeler, Empty Wheel of... The Empty Wheel blog, emptywheel.firedoglake.com. Thanks for spending your late Friday night out there with us, Marcy. Always great to talk to you. Thanks for all of your good work.
Thanks for time, Brad.
You bet. All right. Much more straight ahead. And your calls at 877-520-1150. Brad, in for Malloy. Final hour coming up. Stay with us. Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Well, not here. Brad is here, filling in for me and doing a damn good job. Yes, I'll be back June 29th. Play nice while I'm gone. Keep it lit. That's right. Mike Malloy is back in, well, not this chair, but his chair out there in Atlanta starting next Monday. Mike and Kathy will both be back. This is our final hour on the Malloy Show. Tonight, this week, I've had a great time sitting in for Mike, and much appreciate everyone out there. And by the way, for the folks at DU, go on over to Brad blog and go to that top item where there's a discussion thread going on. Hit comments and say and talk to Agent 99. She's over there. It's a Friday night. It's kind of slow. Her and Blue Bear, too, they're by themselves. Go on over and say hello. Mingle. I like to see all my friends come together, all right? DU Truth Seekers, Brad Blog Truth Seekers, get together, all right? We're going to talk about the media a little bit this hour, and then we're going to open the phones to anything you want to talk about. 877-520-1150. Every time I say that, everybody waits till the end of the hour to start calling. So call now. You'll have to hold for a little bit, but then we'll get to your calls. I want to get to as many calls as we can. On any damn topic you want, wake Miranda up. She's screening our calls and get her working. 877-520-1150. This is a Michael Jackson-free zone. I guess you can talk about him in the open lines if you have to. But the reason it's a Michael Jackson-free zone is because everyone else is covering it. And frankly, not to be insensitive, but he's not coming back. And aside from the news today that he was apparently hooked on Rush Limbaugh's OxyContin, hillbilly heroin, there's not a lot of news there. So I'm not going to use this very valuable microphone here in what I will call the alternative media to discuss the same thing that every other damn place is discussing. If you want to do that, you can go do that. You can go watch, you know, they're covering it 24/7 on the cable channels, I guess. I guess it's that important. No, I think there are other things that are important. Accountability is important. And the fact that the media spent so much time going wall to wall on non-news stories is frankly why we are in this mess in the first place. Instead of covering the lies that the Bush administration was telling in the lead up to the war, as we discussed in the last hour with Marcy Wheeler, they were covering Jennifer Aniston and Brangela or whatever nonsense there was. Today, Dan Frumkin wrote his last column at the Washington Post. He bothered to recognize folks like Marcy Wheeler, folks like Josh Marshall at Talking Points Memo, the investigative bloggers in the blogosphere who have had this story right, all of these stories right from the beginning, while the mainstream media was following, you know, Michael Jackson and Brangela and all that other nonsense. Okay? And now they're wondering why. Gosh, why are we going out of business? Why is nobody buying the Washington Post anymore? And, of course, they're blaming the blogosphere. Perhaps they should blame themselves for failing in the first place. And even now, Washington Post fires Dan Frumkin, the one guy who was asking questions over at the Washington Post in the lead-up to war and beyond. And they allow George Will to stay, Charles Krauthammer to stay, Wolfowitz is writing on their op-ed page. What is going wrong? What has gone wrong? Sue Wilson is a filmmaker who has made a film about exactly that, a documentary film. We're going to talk to her, unfortunately, only for a few minutes because we don't have a lot of time this hour, but I want to make sure to get her in. Her film, Broadcast Blues, will be premiering up in San Francisco. Who is Green Nine, our friends up at Green 960 are picking up this hour live tonight, I'm happy to say. Broadcast Blues will be, screening will be held 4 p.m. on Sunday at San Francisco's Victoria Theater. Otherwise, you can get more information on Broadcast Blues at broadcastblues.tv. Sue Wilson joins us now. There we go. Welcome to the show, Sue.
Hey, Brad, it's so good to have a voice of truth and reason and sanity on these airwaves.
Yeah, I know. It's really troubling flipping around the dial, whether it's the radio, whether it's the TV, and seeing how this time is wasted, this constitutional responsibility that I believe journalists have. In your film, in talking to all the journalists who you came across or interviewed for this film, do the journalists seem to understand that there is a constitutional responsibility as the only industry even mentioned in the Constitution to tell the truth and to use these airwaves appropriately? Is there an understanding out there?
Absolutely. In fact, I mean, Helen Thomas is in the film, and she talks about how we got into such trouble in this war in Iraq because everybody just kind of decided to be patriotic but not use their common sense and their skepticism, which is the tool of the trade when it comes to journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Amy Goodman, she talks about, you know, there were hundreds and hundreds of pro-war people on the air before Iraq. There were three who were anti-war. What's that about? And you know what's interesting? It isn't just the people who are in the film. The journalists across the country really get this. Journalists really like Broadcast Blues. But the parent companies don't ever want to show this. This is truly the movie that the media does not want people to see. That's why I can thank California Common Cause and the Media Alliance for bringing this to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Because without the grassroots, nobody's going to get a chance to hear the truth about what's really going on with these airwaves.
So you believe that there were journalists out there who did want to cover it, and I know Phil Donahue is in your film. He's a perfect case in point, frankly, because his show was the top-rated show on MSNBC at the time that he was on, and then they came out with the Donahue rule that said if you have someone who opposes the war, you have to have two people who are in favor of the war, and which he did, and yet he still got fired with the top-rated show. shows. So is it the so it's not the journalists you're suggesting. You believe it's the editors and the company owners?
It's the editors, it's the company owners, and then maybe it's a vast right-wing conspiracy. David Brock is in the film, and he tells us that there has been a concerted effort by the conservative movement for many, many years to disable journalism from doing its job. If people are dumbed down, if people are not able to decipher what the real facts are, if we think it isn't just Brangelina and Michael Jackson, it's about confusing people about the facts of all kinds of issues, from global warming to health care to war. If we can pretend that we're telling that, let me back up, if conservative radio especially pretends that they are telling the truth to people and people buy it, we are no longer dealing with facts. We're dealing with fantasy, and we're dealing with really trying to get journalists to not be able to do their jobs anymore.
And we are dealing with fantasy. I mean, have you watched Fox News lately? It is a freak show over there. It is insane. They are so out of touch with any kind of reality. And, of course, the defense they always give is, well, we're the number one name in cable, so we must be doing something right. Yeah, well, they'd have even more viewers, I suspect, if they showed porn on the Fox channel, or if they threw Christians to the lions. That was also very popular. Has nothing to do with accuracy and truth, though, does it?
No, it doesn't. And the thing is that we need that so much. Think about where we're at with our economy right now. What would have happened if journalists were really doing their job 5 years ago, 8 years ago? What if people were asking questions about why are there ads in the newspaper saying I can get 125% loan-to-value loan on my house when I don't have any credit at all? Nobody asked those questions because we're dealing now with this cycle where you have to do it fast, you have to do it quick. Nobody has the time to really ask hard questions. And that's so bad for us. But here's the good news.
Good. I need some good news. Yes. What is it?
This movie, at its core, is really about empowerment. It's about reminding we, the people, that we own the public airwaves, that the media belongs to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is another little secret that they've been trying to keep from us.
Yep.
But we own those airwaves, and we are rising. And, you know, we're going to do this film 4 o'clock at the Victoria Theater in San Francisco. If you're in the Bay Area, I hope you come out. If you're going to be part of the Gay Pride March, come on out afterward, because I'm going to tell you what. We're going to do a rally beforehand. We're going to do a protest of hate radio. We're going to demand that the FCC start to study hate radio and the correlations that are coming out between hate radio and hate crime.
Good. Good. And let's, you know, start letting these folks know, these station owners know, that if you don't follow your responsibility, that your license may be threatened. Because there's, you know, these guys who own these leases now, they think they own the airwaves. They don't. It's the people's airwaves. And with that comes a responsibility. Sue Wilson, sorry I had to be so short here tonight. I really appreciate the work you're doing. I hope folks will get out in San Francisco to the Victoria Theater this Sunday, June 28, at 4 p.m. If you can't get there, go to broadcastblues.tv. I believe, can you buy the film online, Sue?
You bet you can.
All right, buy it online or watch for a screening near you. Buy one and screen it in your own community. Be the media. Thanks, Sue Wilson, for all you do.
Thanks, Brad.
You bet. All right, Brad Friedman here on The Molloy Show. Coming back with your calls. Don't wait till the end. 877-520-1150 on anything you want to talk about. We're going to talk to Barry Kendall, though. More on media right after this break, but get in line now. We'll be back.
Then you can't worry.
show. Nice job. That'll wake everyone up, Tony. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. Your open line calls are coming up next at 877-520-1150. Looks like the phone lines are filling up, so if you want to get in, now's the time. We're speaking about the media and the failures thereof. And one guy who has come up with a good idea on how to begin balancing the mess we have, Barry Kendall, the executive director of the Commonweal Institute. And you get more information at commonwealinstitute.org. They've just begun. They're a great progressive organization. They have just announced their new Fellows op-ed program in hopes of countering some of the wingnut welfare out there. And in that regard, full disclosure, I have been invited and accepted to be a fellow at the Commonweal Institute. I am indeed a happy fellow. Barry Kendall joins us now. Welcome to the show, Barry.
Thank you very much. Fred, I lost you there for a second. It's great to be here.
You're on cell, I know, tonight, and I appreciate you staying up late for us here. What is your hope in this new op-ed program for what? Progressives, imagine that. What do you hope to, where do you hope to take this?
Well, we had been thinking about doing this for a while, but it was all triggered ultimately by a letter that we got, an email that we got from a woman, I think she was in Akron, and she said that she had gotten sick and tired of opening up her local paper, and all she would see were editorials and op-ed columns from conservative commentators, and there was never somebody to offer an opposing viewpoint. And so she got in touch with the editorial board at the paper and said, you know, what gives here, people? And they said, look, we don't get the material. If we got the material, we'd be more than happy to present a contrasting viewpoint.
They're actually claiming that that they don't get the material, that nobody provides them with a progressive viewpoint?
I know, which is a hoot, isn't it? We thought, well, this is obviously not the case. But nonetheless, we thought, well, look, it is true that we need more spokespeople for progressive values and progressive ideas in the media. So let's take some of the brilliant voices that are out there writing in the new media space, writing in the blogosphere, writing in online magazines and journals. Let's take some of those voices. Let's provide them with some support. Let's provide them with some training, with some editorial backup and assistance, and see if we can't start elevating these voices out into the so-called mainstream or traditional media.
And I don't think a lot of people understand that when they see these op-eds in these papers, that they are planted is a too cynical word, I think, to use here, but they are actually written by these fellows at these various think tanks, and you use the word conservative. Most of them are not conservative. They're right-wing, and there is a difference. That they're planted, if you will, from these groups. And so do we just not have the groups out there on the progressive side that are turning out this material and giving them to these newspapers?
We don't have as many. We're not as well funded. You know, one of the brilliant things that the right wing has done over time is that they treat their people very well. Mm-hmm. And so somebody comes off of a campaign that they were working for a right-wing candidate. They don't have anything to do. Well, the right-wing infrastructure will find a slot for them, will plunk them down at a think tank and say, here, you stay here for a couple of years, you write some pieces for us, and they call it wingnut welfare.
Yep.
Well, progressives don't quite, at least my organization, some organizations are better funded than ours are. Ours is right now, but progressives, what we have is maybe not welfare, but we'll call it food stamps. That's where we started, but we would love to, we'd love to grow it and really take these really smart people and provide them with all the support that they need to be very regularly writing and thinking and doing the research and creating the messages that are going to promote progressive values out there in the marketplace of ideas.
And I look forward to writing some of those op-eds for you in the weeks ahead as one of your new fellows, Barry Kendall. CommonWheelInstitute.org. That's CommonWheel, W-E-A-L, Institute.org. Please check them out. Please check the blog out over there. Support these guys. And, Barry, I hope that other progressive institutes out there take an example from what you're doing and, you know, start helping out the good guys to get the word out. And thank you for what you're doing, Barry.
Well, thanks a bunch. Thanks for having me on the show, and thank you for joining us. I can't wait to read what you write.
I can't wait to read what I write either. I'm looking forward to it, to finding out what it'll be. Thank you, Barry Kendall. Much appreciate that. And trying to push back against this right-wing dominated media. CommonWealInstitute.org. Check them out. Support them. Support the alternative media if we're ever going to have a chance out here. All right, your calls, a couple lines are still open, 877-520-1150. I will be back to take those calls right after this.
I spoke into his eyes, I thought you died alone, alone, alone. When you're alone, women seem wicked. When you're unwanted, streets are uneven. When you're down, when you're strange,
strange
faces come out of the rain.
Yeah.
When you're strange.
Brad Friedman in for Malloy. And we are going to take your calls, open lines here to finish out the hour, 877-520-1150. Mike and Kathy will return next Monday. Been a great week here, and well, let's see how many calls we can possibly fit in to this half hour. Let's go to Tim in Detroit, Michigan. Welcome to the Malloy Show. What's up, Tim?
Hi, Bradley. First of all, I wanted to compliment you and others for documenting the innumerable election frauds that have gone on from the 2000 elections onwards.
Thanks,
so,
sir.
As a result, I mean, I'm very much in favor of a paper trail. Here, I guess, though, is where
Wait. I got to correct you, Tim. We need you to be in favor of a paper ballot, not a paper trail. Paper trail is meaningless. Paper ballot, hand-marked by the voters. Okay?
Yeah, that's true. That actually is more rigorous because that ballot actually exists in real time.
Yeah, and ballots that exist are always good. Yeah. So paper ballots, paper trails are meaningless. Paper ballots mean the world.
I actually misspoke.
I know you did. No
but,
problem.
But what I get, and this is the issue where it would get complicated because to give a brief history, I've been losing my eyesight steadily for the last several years.
Uh-huh.
And for the last couple of elections, what I've done is I've gone absentee,
mm-hmm.
and I've had someone aid me in voting. So
right.
it's been an opt-to-scan ballot. So we know the issues with that.
Right.
But I guess my question to boil it down is what are blind people to do even if there are paper ballots, since the blind person could not see the paper ballot itself? How would that be addressed in a better bill than the one that's going before Congress now?
Oh, good. Fair enough. Well, as it is now, the Help America Vote Act already requires privacy and independence for voters, for disabled voters who wish to vote that way. You're also, if you're a blind voter, you're allowed to bring someone in there to help you. That is not independent, obviously, but that is one option. Beyond that, there are options out there, tactile ballots. I was speaking with Ellen Tyson earlier today. She actually invented one called VotePad, which she's had a lot of trouble getting into states because the states would rather buy these touchscreen voting machines in which it is impossible for anybody, sighted or not sighted, to verify their votes. So it's certainly not an ideal situation.
Yeah,
but
I've been fighting a lot of these disability so-called activists too,
mm-hmm.
who promote these touchscreen machines, and I've shown them documentation they do not work.
Right.
And
the National Federation for the Blind received $1 million from Diebold, and then what do you know? They were suddenly in favor of Diebold touchscreen machines. If you can't verify it, it's meaningless. You can't verify any touchscreen machine with or without a paper trail.
You know who was behind all that?
Yeah.
Was that Jack Abramoff and Bob Benet? They were instrumental in getting the NFB $1 million.
Oh, don't I know it? I've been writing about that for years. Tim, I got to move on, but thank you for speaking out on this, and please continue to do so.
Sure.
All right. Thanks, Tim. Let's see. Let's get down to there we go. James in El Sobrante, California. Welcome to the show.
Okay, so I'm going to try not to ramble. Work with me here, okay?
Go quick. You don't need to ramble.
McCain and Lieberman, the dynamic duo, were at it again.
What did they do?
they decided to criticize, attack Obama, really. You know, obviously, just saying that he was in. But basically, what McCain, you know, said is that Obama is supposed to treat the entire government of Iran now as, you know, an illegitimate.
As an enemy, and threaten to attack them when they know we couldn't possibly attack them at this point, frankly, if we wanted to, because we got two damn wars going on that John McCain was in support of in the first place.
That's right. And, yeah. And you know that Russia is actually has been helping Iran develop its nuclear program towards the stated right. objective of you know, developing it as an energy resource. So
right.
really, it's either we find some way to work together,
yep.
You know, and the broader international community, which is something that conservatives or right wingers, whatever you want to call them, categorically don't seem to understand, you know, the way that works and how it actually produces results. But, you know, or would you just like what you say? Hey, on the way to Afghanistan, we'll swing by Tehran. I'm sure the protesters there are just that, you know, Allahu Akbar means in Farsi is, please, America, bomb us.
Right, exactly. Thanks for the call, James. Yeah. John McCain, who was singing Bomb Bomb Iran a year ago, is now celebrating the people on the streets that he wanted to bomb. Newsflash, John McCain, you lost. Shut up. All right, let's go now to Simon in Tampa. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind, Simon?
Hey, what's up, Playroom? Everything nice?
Well, you tell me. Well, we got a question?
Yeah, man. First, I just want to know, right? I hear all these politicians was talking about how they're gonna pay for the single payer healthcare,
right?
And where they're gonna get the money for it. But the question, you know, it's like nobody asking the same question. I mean, the insurance company doing it, you know, they apparently having money to pay for the people that they representing. I mean. I don't think they're more powerful than the U.S. government. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the same way that the U.S. government could also pay for it too.
Yeah. Hey, Simon, the health insurance companies at this point, the banks, the corporations, they are the U.S. government. Appreciate the call, Simon. Sorry,
right,
sorry to break the news. All right, brother.
All right.
Speaking of health care, you can get in here, 877-520-1150. Celeste from Toledo, Ohio, talking about electoral messes. What's on your mind, Celeste?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm seeing we're probably not going to have a chance to get single-payer health care, but they better not waffle and give the public option away, because there are too many people who are underinsured who can't afford an insurance premium of $500 or $600 a month for one person.
Mm-hmm. And don't be surprised, by the way, if that public option also slips away. Rahm Emanuel was given hints the other day that they might be willing to do away with the public option. And this is what happens when you go in, when you negotiate with yourself. You know, they should have gone in asking for single payer and settled for public option. But you know what? We all saw this coming. Barack Obama back, a year or so ago when he was running for president, he said when they were threatening to withhold funding on one of the war spending bills, he said, well, we'll probably give it to them anyway. And I just wanted to let people know I'll probably vote for the war spending anyway, because they should know what kind of president I would be. Well, look, if you're going to show your hand, as Barack Obama did back then, you got no negotiation leverage. And that's what they're giving away. The Democrats are giving away left and right, Celeste.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. We are a majority. What's this bipartisan stuff? And if Obama or anybody thinks that we should pay taxes, those of us who are fortunate to have employer-supplied health care, why should I pay taxes on that?
Well, for what? For health care?
I heard this yesterday. It was on Air America that the possibility of taxing Americans, taxing our health benefits. So I'm lucky.
I have
a really progressive senator in Sherrod Brown
right.
here in Ohio. So I'm going to send him a letter and let him know what I think about this, because
Please
this is
do.
Outrageous.
Please do. Please let your congressmen and your senators know how you feel about this stuff, because I promise you, they're going to get away with what they want to get away with anyway. But at least you can make them fight for it. But you have to make noise. You can't give up. I know it gets difficult out there sometimes, but, you know, keep making noise. It does, I promise you, make a difference. Anything that I've seen happen in this country over the last, I don't know how many years, any positive thing, is because one person has stood up, has made noise, has raised hell, has become the media. Please. Don't give up out there. We got room for more of your calls, 877-520-1150. Let me get to Tom in Murrieta, California. Welcome to the show. Tom, what's up?
Who would that be that would make all that kind of noise?
Tom! How are you, Tom Corbett, the great election activist down there with Save Our Vote in Riverside. How are you feeling tonight, sir?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Well. I restarted chemotherapy on Monday, but I'm, you know, this is 8 years into it, and I'm feeling really good.
For the rest of the country who doesn't know, Tom Corbett and the work they've done in Riverside County, the first county in the country forced to vote on touchscreen voting machines back in 2000. He is a tireless, and I mean tireless, activist, because he's also dealing with cancer, as he just mentioned, in getting rid of those damn machines down there. He got rid of a lot of them, but the fight has not stopped. And Tom, you're a perfect example of what I was talking about. One person standing up and not giving up. You've made that difference down there, Tom.
Well, I thank you so much for that. And we've got a great group of people here. And Greg Tabor has kind of picked up the baton, and he's going to be running with it. I've moved from 110% commitment to 10%, but the point is, I'm still going to be involved. I just need to put time in with my family.
Well, you deserve some rest and a break and time to get better from all you're doing, Tom.
It's been almost 4 years. I was going to mention, Brad, when the gentleman who was sight restricted called in, one of the options that they have are the audio voting systems that go with the DREs, and so you can plug them in and it walks you through verbally the voting system, so they don't have to use a tactile type of.
Well, that's correct, but the problem there, Tom, is that's the system that I used last June, and it was an audio balloting system, and it misprinted 4 out of 12 of my votes.
Isn't it incredible?
Someone who couldn't see would have had no idea.
Yeah, no way at all.
Unbelievable. Tom, I got to get rolling, my friend.
I want to commend you for being on Malloy all week. You've done an outstanding job, and my best to you and Desi.
Bless you, brother. Good talking to you, Tom. Take care.
Bye-bye, brother.
All right. Let me get to Bruce. Do I have time? Bruce, real quickly, in Los Angeles.
Is Bruce?
This is Bruce.
Oh, hi. How are you doing? Thanks for taking my call, Brad.
Thank you.
Yeah, you guys were talking earlier about problems about getting a progressive message out through the media. You know, my theory is kind of this way. It's the corporate media, they're in the business of, the news media. They're not in the business of informing or educating the population. They're in the business of selling toothpaste, selling cars. It's advertising is what they're doing. And I think that the progressive voice tends to be more nuanced, more kind of the gray areas, whereas the right-wing, you know, neocon messages, black, white, you're with us, you're against us,
mm-hmm.
You know, this kind of thing, it's much more simpler. It sells more. And therefore, if it sells more, it gets people to tune in. And again, they're selling toothpaste and
Yeah, but you know what?
Whatever.
But no. You know what? Stephanie Miller was talking to Tom Hartman not long ago and had said that she's on something like 60 affiliates in the morning. Laura Ingraham is on a couple hundred affiliates up against Stephanie. Virtually everywhere that Stephanie Miller runs up against Laura Ingraham, guess what happens? Stephanie wins. The fact is, however, she's only on 60 affiliates. Laura Ingraham, distributed by, syndicated by Fox News, her show is on hundreds of stations. It's not the content. It's the fact that they're not being put on the air. There's so few progressives out there on the air. We need more of them. We need more stations for them. If the arguments get out, Malloy, ain't nothing nuanced about Malloy. And he's damned entertaining. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. One more segment. Take a few more of your calls. You can try to get in 877-520-1150. We'll be back right after this. had a great time sitting in for Mike Malloy this week. I want to thank engineer Tony Sorrentino. One of these days I'm going to get that right. Tony, it has been an honor and a pleasure to work for you, my friend. Really enjoyed it. Same to you out there in the hallway, Miranda Moreno, screening calls. We're going to get to a few more of those calls here. Thank you, Miranda. Producer Desi Doyen, thank you, dear. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Of course, Agent 99 manning the BradBlog.com chat room. Thanks to K-Talk AM 1150 out here in Los Angeles for hosting me all week. It's greatly appreciated. Also, of course, to Mike and Kathy Malloy for allowing me to screw up your show all week. I enjoyed it. They will be back on Monday. And, of course, thanks to listeners out there, you folks over at BradBlog, you truth seekers over at DU, bless you all. Thank you for everything and supporting me here this week. I've had a blast. All right, let me grab a few more callers here very quick. Keep your comments nice and short. Thank you. Steve in Burbank, welcome to the show. What's up, sir?
How you doing, Brad?
I'm hanging in.
Well, they have this thing called fair and balanced, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, fair and balanced should be 50-50. I mean, could that be a valid talking point against these loony bins or what? Is that possible?
Well, A, they're just making it up. B, fairness is important. But C, balance is baloney. And I've used the comparison before. It's like, you know, if we can look out the window and see that it's sunny, there's no reason to bring on, some say it's raining.
Okay.
We can see the truth. Yes, Steve, yeah. What else you got, real quick?
Well, you invited me to come in, take over the microphone. I would have, except yeah. I don't know where the bleep button is or how to even operate it. So that's, I couldn't do a good as job as you. Nobody could.
Well, Tony's got his eye on that bleep button, especially with you here, Steve.
Oh, no.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Uh-huh.
All right. Let's get down to three. There we go, line three. Dave in Chicago. What's up, Dave?
When talking about Fox News ratings, it should always, always be noted that Fox News is basic cable. Call a right-wing show tomorrow, misrepresent yourself, and shout that out.
Well, what does it mean? What does it matter that it's basic cable?
It's basic cable. That's where they get the numbers from. It's not popular because people love it. It's popular because it's basic cable.
Well, but so is MSNBC, isn't it?
No, you got to order that.
No, you don't.
MSNBC?
No. Nope.
It's not even an XM anymore.
No, well, yeah, well, it certainly doesn't. It's not on as many cable outlets, that's for sure. But CNN is everywhere, and yet Fox News beats them because, as I say, they love throwing Christians to the lions there, metaphorically, of course. But train wrecks are always fun to watch. Thanks for... Oops, I screwed up. There we go. Thanks for the call, Dave. Let's get to... government oversight. There we go. Alameda, California. Gary, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Brad?
I'm doing good. Give me 20 seconds, your thoughts.
Okay, they have these government oversight hearings about the future of the V-22 Osprey.
Right.
And I just wanted to tell everybody out there to get involved in where all these billions of defense dollars are going. This Osprey thing is just, I mean, Dick Cheney tried to kill it. That's how bad it was. It's just a monstrosity.
And, that's the plane that doesn't work, right? It keeps crashing all the time.
Yeah, it's killed a lot of people, and it's got defense contracts in so many different states that they haven't ever been able to kill it. It's been going on 25 years, and they spent $28 billion on it, and it's just...
Well,
incredible waste of money.
It is, of course. And the fact of the matter is, there's another waste of money that Obama has threatened to veto if Congress moves forward with plans to build more Lockheed Martin F-22 fighter jets that he doesn't want, that the Department of Defense doesn't want, Robert Gates doesn't even want, and yet Congress is putting that into legislation coming up, billions of dollars, and he says I don't want it, but the Congress is, you know, moving it forward. Again, the lobbyists, the defense contractors, they own these guys, and until we raise hell, until we, you know, make them realize that we don't give a damn if you're Republican, if you're a Democrat, if you're not in favor of the people, if you're not in favor of the Constitution and the people, it's time for you to go. Don't fall into that right-left, red-blue, liberal-conservative paradigm. It's phony. Don't buy it. My thanks again to Mike and Kathy Malloy. They will be back with you on Monday. Beyond that, you'll find me at bradblog.com as I go back to just being a blogger. Couldn't be prouder of it. Thanks, guys. Until Monday, keep it lit. Watch your back. Thanks for everything, Truth Seekers.